listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Governor Evers and Republicans are at odds over expanding the state's Medicaid program and how to maintain coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. We'll talk about the impact of the plans with an expert on healthcare policy.
First, 5 years ago, an article called Justified Anger appeared on the cover of the Cap Times, a weekly news magazine in Madison. The writer wrote, "I love this community, but I am fed up," and went on to describe the lack of equal respect for African Americans in what is widely thought of as a liberal city.
That article jump-started a movement and a conversation in the Madison area about equal opportunities and treatment for people of color in the city, and expanded out into conversations around the state. We're joined by the writer now to find out what's happened in the years since that article came out.
Reverend Alex G. is the president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. He joins us now to talk about justified anger 5 years later. Reverend G., welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be back, and thank you for inviting me once again.
Well, thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Sure.
Reverend G., in the original article, you said that you're not upset because Madison has issues, but because Madison skates on many of those issues. Can you talk about what you meant by that then, and if you've seen any changes in that over the course of the 5 years?
Sure. First of all, I can't believe that that was 5 years ago. But my intention was, I'm a product of Madison reaching out to folks who may be disadvantaged. My mom was a high school dropout, dropped out her freshman year of school in Chicago, came to Madison and got her undergraduate degree from Wisconsin and a full ride for graduate school and graduated with honors. Fast forward 40 years later, people can't find their place. It's hard to get into the campus. It's hard to find the place. And so when that shift happened, I just wanted to remind Madison, hey, I'm a product of the great work that you've done. Let's get back to that. And I felt that the city just rested on its laurels of what it had done historically, who it used to be, and didn't feel the pressure of changing with the increasing diversity. So that's what I'm referring to, that I want to see Madison be the wonderful community that I experienced as a six-year-old.
And we've seen in the news lately, not just Madison, but Wisconsin as a whole. A Wallet Hub study says Wisconsin is the most racially segregated state in the country. We see similar reports about Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area, Madison, Dane County. Why Wisconsin, do you think? Why are we so segregated here?
You know, let me just state something. Our state motto is forward. We have the Wisconsin idea. We have a progressive mindset. Your question is right on point. If I run a nonprofit, if I were told that our organization had the worst results, the worst staff, the worst outcome, I would sequester the whole staff for those who would remain on my staff and say, how are we going to address this issue? I feel because we skate from them rather than addressing them is how this exacerbates. When you think about the most racist or more segregated state, that's a huge statement. We don't see ourselves being last place in anything. And in a state that sort of promotes it, we're colorblind and don't see difference, to be known for segregation is certainly a black eye. But I think it's because we don't bring the people to the table who can help us understand the issues. It's what I established in the early article. We need to be at the table. Typically, something is planned. There's going to be a formula. There's going to be a response to that segregation report. And then once it's done, typically in typical fashion, black people and people of color will be asked to come and rubber stamp it and not really shape it and tell us, why have we gotten here? So part of it is we don't listen to our own residents who say, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. For decades, African Americans have said, we feel safer in Mississippi, in rural Mississippi, than we do in Wisconsin, because we have this concept that because we're the North, we're accepting, and now that is proving the segregation, the disparity that African-American people and people of color have been touting for decades, but no one has listened.
Yeah, after the original Justified Anger article came out, there were a few community meetings held that eventually led to the framework of a plan for Madison. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The framework is the most comprehensive snapshot of the African-American community by the African-American community in Madison's history. We've had studies on our disparity, but we have not had studies on what we really want. And so we listened to countless African-Americans, from students to single moms to men who are incarcerated, people who are coming out of prison, and we laid out things in five areas that said, if we want to move the needle here are five things that need to take place. Now, those five things have got to be taken into consideration by many sectors. There's not a single organization or branch of government that can make that single change. But what we laid out was what black people said they wanted to see. For example, black wealth development, not just handout programs, but wealth generation programs. They wanted to see stronger educational outcomes, but also programs in schools that focus on the needs of African-American kids. Communities have told us they want grocery stores, but that's not what we report to the broader community. Typically, when the African-American community says what it needs, it's translated in another way to the broader community. And so that plan, that framework, was really the voice of black people saying, here's an agenda we set. We need the broader community to pay attention, and here are the things we've got to move on if the needle of racial disparity is going to move in our community.
Talking to Reverend Alex G. from the Fountain of Life Church in Madison. A little over 5 years ago, he wrote a piece in the Cap Times titled Justified Anger. And it's a lot happened in response. It started a lot of conversations, meetings, and more. And did you see that? Did you anticipate that when you wrote it? Did you think, okay, I'm going to write this thing, I'm going to vent, and then I get back to my daily life? Or did you think it would become this demand on your time that it's become since then?
No, friend, I did not anticipate it at all. In fact, at one point, Paul Fanlon, who's now the publisher of Cap Times, actually said to me, Alex, when this story is finished, if you write it the way you've just discussed, because we talked through it, if you write it the way you've just discussed it, I guarantee you a year from now, people are still going to be talking about this article. And I laughed in his face. But I did not know the name. The name came out the morning the article did. So I learned it the same time the public did. I didn't pick the name Justified Anger. But no, I thought I would write a nice little op-ed piece and go back to my nice little life. I had no idea that 5 years later, I actually spoke, I think, Roger, with you that same day. I think I came on WPR that same afternoon after the article came out, and 5 years later, we're still talking about it and some of its impact, and that pleases me.
You know, Reverend G, you called the last 5 years a roller coaster of emotions, and I want you to describe some of those emotions, but I want to pick out something in particular first.
Sure.
And that is, it felt like a few years ago that it just seemed that every day we heard about a young African-American male being shot by police. And
right.
The feeling in the greater Madison community was that it could never happen here until it did. Can you talk about the death of Tony Robinson and the aftermath of that? And was that part of the roller coaster of emotions that you felt over the course of the past 5 years?
Yes and no. And I'll answer this with Mr. Connor. I was actually in Kansas when that shooting happened. And I got a call from one of my staff members and said, you must not know what's going on, because I think I just posted something kind of humorous. And I went to the Facebook feed or whatever, saw what was happening. So I flew back the next morning. We rallied around that. We were shocked. We were gasping. We were in awe. It's what Madison does when there's trouble. But then we quickly, once the rallying started, went right back to our own normal lives. So part of the roller coaster is we know how to rally and have meetings when our dirt comes to light. But we quickly went back to our normal life. And so when that news came about what happened with Tony Robinson, it broke my heart. I had warned, Chief Cobalt asked me maybe a week and a half before that shooting, could Ferguson ever happen in Madison? And I said, yes. And he said, crap, you just ruined my day. He said, can I put you on speed dial so that we can talk whenever these things kind of happen? It's so ironic that we had this talk like a week and a half, 2 weeks,
wow,
before this took place. And so I just think that this was my Madison. This is not the Madison I grew up in. So that part hurt my heart. But as national news outlets started reaching out to me and other black leaders to talk about our experiences, we were told by white leaders in the community that that was not our job, to speak on Madison's issues on a national level, because we were threatening Madison's business, Madison's welfare. We were told to stand down, that we were getting out of place. So for me, that's the roller coaster ride. It's almost like someone's going to hurt you and cause you pain, but don't you tell anyone. I could talk to our congregation. I could talk to Roger. I could talk to other news outlets. But when national outlets started calling me and I started giving national interviews, I was told to get back at my place. There was a community-wide meeting that was called. I won't even name all of the muckety-mucks who were there and the heads of various sectors and organizations. And I, with another black community leader, were told to be quiet and stand down, that we were getting out of place.
We're talking with Reverend Alex G. He's the founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church. It's been 5 years since his article, Justified Anger, appeared in the Cap Times.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Wherever you live, do you see communities of color standing separate from white communities? Do you think families of color get the same support and respect as white families? If you're a person of color yourself, what changes would you still like to see in your community? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Connor.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Reverend Alex G. He's the founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. We're talking about his article, Justified Anger, that started a community conversation among white Madisonians and the African-American community a little over 5 years ago.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you see racial divisions and inequities in your community? Have you seen any signs of progress in the last 5 years? Do you think families of color get the same support and respect as white families? If you're a person of color, what changes would you still like to see in your community? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org.
Reverend G, you said that Madison can be pretty good at responding in a moment, but not necessarily so good in responding in a sustained way. You could probably say similar things about the entire United States on racial issues for the past, since we've been a country. What does it take to take those moments and turn them into a sustained slog, even through the boring times of doing the little things that can make a difference?
Oh, great question. Well, I'll tell you what seems to be working for us here in this community. One, I think it requires education. When the Race to Equity Report came out in 2013, the Madison Prep discussion or debate a few years before that, and then Justified Anger, the majority of Madison did not believe that we had issues. So I think the realization that there are issues takes place. I think it helps. I think writing the article and then having Tony Robinson shooting and then what happened with Tamir Rice and Eric Garner and Michael Brown, I think it caused people to realize we really are in a crisis in a country, so why would it not happen here? Then I think we need people to move from apathy and fear and take action. So part of our work is building capacity in African Americans, coming to the table and shaping the agenda. What do we need to do to fix this? What empowers you? What would make you want to raise your children here? What would make you want to stay here after college? But then building capacity in our non-black, but particularly white allies, and giving them education, training, inspiration, a challenge, but then mobilizing them to act on these systems. Black people don't have enough access to address all of these issues together, but when you have white members who are enlightened and mobilized to ask questions of foundations about their funding, or schools about curriculum, or corporations about hiring, that adds a different degree of change. If we're going to bring systemic change, it must be on a policy level, on a practice level, and on a personal level. When we pick one of these three, it's like a stool with just two legs. So we have to change things legislatively. We've got to change policies that are not fair, then change people's personal perceptions. That's part of our theory of community transformation that we're beginning to implement with our history class and our black leadership program and some of the strategies that we have. So I think as a country, we have either not challenged the policies or the practices, or people are so segregated that they don't have enough interaction with each other to learn something different about each other. And we believe that those three P's, when implemented, gives us the best chance to see sustained change. And you've got to have people who will benefit most from that change, shaping what that change looks like. And historically in Madison, black folks have not been at that table. And part of the work of Justified Anger is creating that table, bringing people to that table, setting the agenda, and then mobilizing our non-black allies to act with us.
In the new article, you had mentioned something that you refer to as the need to overproduce compared to the average citizen when you're talking about racism in the greater Madison community. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Sure. There's this sense for many of us who are people of color, we talk about it often as African Americans, that because there's often a general misunderstanding of our capabilities, we just sort of tell ourselves we've got to be the first one there and the last ones to leave because the assumption is that we don't really have the goods. And that's not all the time. But when you hear comments like, wow, you're articulate, as if there's an assumption that you don't have a command of the English language. Or wow, you have an earned doctorate, as if African Americans have not been getting PhDs even from Ivy League universities for over 100 years. There's still the perception that maybe through affirmative action or some set-aside program, we became a manager or homeowner by some giveaway program, but not necessarily through meritocracy. And so we understand that we're constantly addressing that and that we need to be better just to be average.
Talking to Reverend Alex G. with the Fountain of Life Church in Madison a little over 5 years ago. He wrote a piece that ended up with the headline Justified Anger, calling the Madison community out over issues of race and racism, lessons that come up again and again around Wisconsin, issues of segregation and inequities in racial outcomes. Reverend G., you write in a recent piece about the toxicity of racism and how it affects people of color. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I use the example that, I love the lakes that surround Madison. But if we have issues with phosphorus and algae, we don't fix the sick fish issues by creating more fish hatcheries. We've got to get rid of the phosphorus and deal with the algae. When it comes to race issues, the question for 5 years has been, well, what programs are you introducing, as if creating more fish or hatching more fish and then dumping them into the lake is going to make them outswim the algae. The toxicity is the fact that we have not diversified our system. We have not addressed our system. We have a wonderful Wisconsin idea that was created over 100 years ago, but it did not have black people in its scope. So who's going to rope that in? President Charles Van Hise was not talking about the black community when he was saying he won't rest at night until the Wisconsin idea touches the whole state and betters the whole state. We've got a system we've been fed this sense that we were very progressive in the North. We had slaves in Dodge County under territorial, Governor Dodge. We've had slaves in Wisconsin. We act like that's not our history. And because we don't acknowledge it, we don't make the necessary changes. So the toxicity is that we've got to change because there's nothing wrong with the system. But we have now learned, this is why we have our partnership with the Wisconsin Partnership Program, that the microaggressions and the stress due to racial isolation, there's a study out of the University of Utah, I believe, that talks about racial battle fatigue, is now causing blacks to die of sicknesses more readily and more earlier than their white counterparts. So now we're learning that the stress system, this toxicity, is causing us to have shorter lives and greater infant mortality. So now it's not just about fairness. It's about living standards and vitality, and that just ups the ante on this for me. So we've got to address the toxicity because it's not just the kids are not reading well and that more men are in jail. We're learning that we are now dying more quickly than our white counterparts. And that is just that's just unconscionable in my mind.
Reverend G., you've been working on creating change for a while now. So how do you think that change is made? Is it many small actions? Is it a few drastic changes? Or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. It's all the above. I'll give you an example. There are folks who go through our U.S. Black History course. I think I was here talking with someone on Roger's team or another, some year ago when our third U.S. Black History course started. Well, we've now had 600 people go through. We're now about to have 850. Many of them are judges, police commanders, executives of national, international companies. They're not going back, and they're rethinking their hiring practices. They're thinking about how they diversify folks, where they need to be trained. They're making small changes at the policy level. So it takes a little bit of all of that. But the big thing is we need the help of our non-black allies to help us to dismantle these systems. So ask questions of the media about the diversity, ask questions about banks about their lending practices and if there are any residual effects of redlining. Use your voices as white allies to help us move on this system while we build capacity in black leaders to continue to lead and share their voices. I think by bringing these groups together to work on solutions together is a big part of what we've got to do. We're so afraid of each other and separated of each other that we don't have the capacity to really build solutions together. And so it's got to happen on a policy, on a practice, and on a personal level. But we've got to learn to walk and work together and strategize together. But at the same time, our non-black, particularly our white allies, have got to ask the tough questions of systems and practices that they know aren't right. They've got to help us dismantle that and not just expect us to do that.
In our last minute, Reverend G, are you seeing, as you look to younger generations, leaders rising there that are giving you some hope?
Definitely. I am seeing young African-American leaders who want to be a part of the solution, but I'm also seeing, this is very interesting, and this goes back to the original article, my local white residents who are in their 80s and 90s are reading the articles, they're writing me notes, they're calling me at my home saying, I knew we weren't finished, we've got more work to do. So I am finding that there are many older white colleagues through our history class are being exposed to truths, historical facts. We're taught by UW faculty. Their eyes are being opened, and it's making them want to be mobilized as allies. And so I'm seeing older white folks and younger black people working together in our organization to create solutions together, and that encourages me tremendously.
Reverend G, thank you so much for spending the time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Reverend Alex G is the president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of the Fountain of Life Church in Madison. 5 years ago, he wrote a piece called Justified Anger that appeared on the cover of the Cap Times, which is a Madison newspaper.
Coming up, we'll dig into Governor Evers' proposal to expand Wisconsin's Medicaid program and a Republican effort to pass a state law protecting health care coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Darrell Conner. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.